All right, we're on with Sleep.
What's up, dude? Happy to be here.
I'm very happy to be here as well. So we just got to get into it.
Before we do, I've been working on this the last like 5 hours, and I want to show you exclusive. You're the first person to hear it besides maybe five people that just heard it drop on TikTok.
Let's go.
But, yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Came in instantly with the heat. So we got to talk on that track a little bit. We were talking about, you know, for running sure. it back to 2017 when I told you I was listening to a snippet when he had that up, just a snippet of that song. Let's talk about that because you come from a rock background. Yeah, all about it.
I do. And when I first heard Post Malone with White Iverson back in like the SoundCloud days, and he just started getting all this recognition. And I just looked at him as like one of the true rock stars of our generation. And when that song dropped, dude, my heart did. And it was just a masterpiece immediately with 21 Savage. And I was like, you know what? I want to feel like a rock star. I'm going to put him in a techno track. Go for it.
Well, dude, it's a sick track, and I think that really brings us into your story because Sleep, that was the first thing I caught wind. Okay, so you were all over social media. I think we have some mutual friends. I need to go back and do some research. Let's talk about the name Sleep.
Yeah. I have so many different reasons, but the reason I'm using now is this is what I like to tell girls when I go to go to bed, sleep. But it comes from like, okay, I was passed out on my couch in my living room, and my friend comes in, he's like, sleep, man. And I was like, did you say sleep? And he's like, no, I said sleep. I said, dude, sleep is my new artist name. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so jealous of you. And that's just kind of how Sleep started, was just a friend of mine just saying goodnight to me. And Sleep is kind of the duality between our shared reality space and our individual dream space, where it's, if you really want to get cosmic within it, what is really the difference between our reality that we're in right now and our dream space reality? Because we don't have like the knowledge to access these doors and these portals to interact on that plane when we're dreaming as we do in this shared reality space that we're in right now. And we can get even more cosmic as we go, but I think that's about as big as an explanation as I can give.
Yeah, I do want to get some more into transcendentalism later in the conversation for sure. That's pretty poignant. And I guess that starts us off with the scene in general, not just the electronic music scene, but your entry point into music. That's what I want to hear because you've had a really interesting trajectory.
Yeah, thanks for asking. And thank you for having me here today. I appreciate you reaching out. This was really, really nice of you. And it was just right when I saw it, I was like, fuck it, let's do it. So I'm happy to be here.
Likewise.
I come from kind of a rock background, playing kind of a classic rock blues band in like high school. We were, you know, Led Zeppelin, The Doors, kind of vibe. And then I got really into pop punk and rock in that way. And then I started getting more into like this trap thing. And I just noticed a lot of pop music kind of going in more of this like hip hop style. And I tried that for a little bit. And then I saw the SoundCloud rappers and like the emo and the goth rap that was coming out. All of it has been like really big influences in my heart. And it wasn't until I got into electronic music when I was in the underground rave scene back in like 2015, maybe even 2015 to like 2017, maybe, where these like underground raves in downtown Los Angeles in these abandoned warehouses. And only like the coolest of the cool people were there. And I felt so intimidated by the people around me and their style and what they liked and their culture. And I was like, this is exactly what I like to be around. I like to be around people who challenge me, where I feel inspired to be a better person, where I feel inspired to learn more. And it was just the music that was playing was electronic. It was that house. It was that techno. It was the stuff that I'm playing today. And I just never really knew how to play it. I used to talk shit about electronic music. And when Skrillex came out with his big tracks, I was like, oh, this shit ain't fucking music. This isn't music. And then I started to realize that, you know, the computer is an instrument in itself. And because I come from analog, I come from playing guitar and sitting in your room for 6 hours a day and playing an instrument, singing 6 hours a day. And that's what I know to be, that's what I know to be musicianship. So I have this bitter mentality. I'm jaded and like Mr. Know-it-all about, oh yeah, I know what I'm talking about. And then I, you know, grew into it and I started to educate myself more. I started to see and hear and feel the scene, and I was wrong. And I, you know, I made a bad call, and I, but today I'm so happy to have the knowledge and strength in my production and the abilities that I've, you know, grown with to create something that's a part of that scene.
Absolutely. And I guess speaking to that, I want to touch back briefly on the rave scene downtown, because
yeah,
I remember back during that time period, because I was in LA most of the year, and basically it was, to your point, it was super intimidating, because I came from a background of going to post-hardcore shows and alt shows in general. And that was an experience that I missed when I was a child, when the rave scene was really popular. I was way too young, like the original Y2K rave scene. So,
So my
question to you is, what was that experience like in kind of in more detail, if you can describe it, those underground raves in LA? Because people have such questions. Is it, would you say it's a resurgence of Y2K culture? What was your experience?
Do people wonder about it? It's I feel blessed to have done it when it was coming up and gone there. I'll tell you an experience.
Sure.
Pull up downtown, just absolute garbage, filth everywhere. Abandoned warehouse you wouldn't even think anything is going on in. No windows, but maybe a potential line outside that goes down the block, and you're like, whoa, this is intense. Where am I? And first off, it's very unfortunate, the poverty that downtown in Los Angeles has. And I don't want to steer away. I don't want to push that away. That is a thing. But within this, there were groups of people, individuals that had real sense of self and expression and knowledge of culture, fashion, music, art. And you can just feel this energy. And I'd walk past people with this just cool style and just looks in their face like, you ain't shit. And I love that. I'm like, yes, please tell me I'm not awesome. Because I don't know. It's just inspiring to me. That's why I love New York. Yeah. I was walking down New York, man, and they are just like, all right. And they just eyeball you. And that's kind of what I got there. But then you go inside and it's pitch black, but the lights are on the stage. And this is like the first time I'm seeing like a real DJ. And just unbelievable sound. Everyone's just in a big pile in the middle. And, you know, there's porta potties outside. A friend of mine dropped her phone in the porta potty, and I washed her hands off with a beer that I had in my trunk. I had a whole case of beer in my trunk, and I just washed her hands off with this with a beer. It was crazy.
Yeah, but there's worse things in downtown LA, not to make light of it, to wash your hands off with, but yeah, for sure.
That is true. It's so. Not bad, but yeah, I can just, you know, people with like cool hats, jackets, clothes, and I can see their eyes right now. I can look into their eyes right now, and they're looking into my eyes, and I can still see that look and that. But it was welcoming. It wasn't fuck off. It was, we just know shit. And I'm like, I know shit. I want to know more shit.
That's it. That's exactly what I was going for. There's some indescribable feeling in the underground scene in LA for all genres of music.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're articulating. So that comes to your influences. So speak more to your influences, large or small. I would love to hear them.
Yeah, absolutely. Metallica is my favorite band. Ironically, I'm wearing their shirt right now. I was recording a TikTok. It's one of my favorite shirts to wear in my TikToks. But influence-wise, electronically, I would have to say my first was Chris Lake. Amazing, amazing producer and DJ. Dirty Bird was really badass. And I used to do like these heavy bass lines and things. And then, you know, it's people that inspire me. It's the scene all around that inspires me. And I'm trying to move through it in a strategic way to best express myself. Because no matter what I try and sound like, I'm only going to sound like me. And even if I'm pulling like someone who I really love right now would be Eli Brown. I'm pulling his influence majorly, and it doesn't matter how much I try and sound like him, I only sound like me. And that's what I'm really grateful for. I think that's when you truly know your sound. When you truly know your sound, you will express yourself in a way like another artist or another musician, and only you will come out of it. Only your sound will come out of it. It doesn't matter. You can't know no matter how hard you try. That's what I want to. That's what I tell people who are like just starting out. Is no matter how hard you try and sound like someone, you're only going to sound like yourself. So be inspired and don't be afraid to classify yourself, to put yourself in a genre. That's a major mistake, I feel. We'll get into that. I know you got more questions for me. I don't want to ramble for an hour. I could go off, but
no, that's perfect. I love when we elaborate. I think to that point, if we could touch on that a little bit more, you know, Rick Owens, for example, the designer, he talks about the process of curation, the process of a large body of work, just doing as much as you can, putting out as much as you can, and then distilling that down to its elements. And I think that touches on your point about how you can only sound like yourself. You might start out with a vision for what you love, but through that process of a large working body, you know, you curate it down to who you are. So I like that you make mention of it that way.
I think you're really right about that Rick Owens thing. And that comes from somebody who's like huge mainstream, where you just produce, you produce, 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 and then you... Are you talking about funneling down into like the finished product? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. And then as you get, but then as you develop more experience, then you can, you can draw on that body of work to say, okay, this is the best. This is that funnel to your point. These are the little, you know, finished products that speak the most to me out of 100 things. It might be 10 things. And that could be what an album looks like. I'm not totally sure of that process.
Right. And that that's how like major pop artists do it. So, you know, some of the biggest artists in the world have like 45 songs, you know, someone like The Weeknd but I love the interaction of Rick Owens and Machine Gun Kelly. Did you see that one?
I did. That little viral. What?
I love give me your that, take on that, dude. I wish I could leave conversations like that.
Yeah, he was, what did he say? He said, okay, I got to go to my to a thing or to the party or something like that.
It was so just naturally like, I'm done with this. And That's the kind of vibe I need, like, in my life. I'm not that kind of person, but I wish I was. It's just not my personality. I just love that stuff.
Well, let me ask you a question then, because, LA, New York City, a lot of major cities do have a reputation for the way people interact transactionally. Okay, there's some truth to that. But imagine, because you take Rick Owens as an example, he's able to just be honest in that moment to say, okay, I know this is important for people watching, but, I've got my own life. I've got things to do. He's that authentic. So for you personally, how do you feel it's been navigating those transactional relationships, and have you become more authentic in the way you've handled them as time has gone on?
Oh, goodness. I don't want to like toot my own horn, but
Please toot it.
self has always been a very important thing to me. Ever since I was young and being, the alt kid, the excluded person, the not so popular, the left out, the outcast of the outcast, the under the underground. Like all that is where I come from. A lot of people don't know that because of what I am today. And I feel like a lot of people that have self, have culture, have real expression today are people that came from that because they were always themselves. And it's been hard. It's been difficult to navigate a scene with people that don't share that value sometimes. And but I think that's with everything. And what's great about Los Angeles and what's great about New York is that you will have just as many interactions, positive as you will negative. There's just as many people being an asshole as there are people being positive and a great person. And I think that you just have to blow it off. Blow off any kind of interaction you don't want to have and look forward and move forward with the positive interactions that you want to, that you would like to have.
I like that. No, that's a very articulate way of putting it. That's perfect. And
You're very articulate. I feel like I speak like a 6-year-old.
I appreciate the compliment. Well, I think getting to the depth of, the artistic industry is a big goal of what I'm doing right now, is trying to figure out how people feel on a visceral and intellectual level, as well as as their work, but just also getting to know them on a very, like I said, deep intellectual level. So
I don't even know if people care.
might be true. I've considered that.
I think people care about, I really believe art to be objective. I'm not a subjective art guy, and it might be a little controversial, but I feel that the artist is trying to express themselves in a way. If they decide that they want it to be subjective, that's a whole nother thing.
Of course.
But like, I'm here for the artist. I'm there to see what they're expressing. And I feel like people today, they want to feel what they want to feel. They want to see the artist as they want to see the artist. It doesn't matter.
That is interesting. So if you could touch on that briefly for a second, how might you describe that experience of, so for everything you as an artist, I, anyone else, they're putting out what they wish to express of themselves, but you're saying that the other person is always going to be subjective for the most part.
Mostly, yeah, it's a little selfish.
It is.
And
It is
I think,
possessive.
right, and I think we have to rise above that, and we got to be like, all right, cool. Now, as an artist, I'm here for your entertainment. Then you're starting to get into like the entertainment value.
Of
It's like,
course.
okay, if that's how you want to be entertained, let me do that. And it's kind of like the dancing monkey kind of situation where you got to drop your pride.
Of course.
As an artist, I think today pride will destroy you. Not take it so serious and grow with your fans, attract them in ways that is interesting to them, and in that it's more strategic. And in that time, you got to also throw your real self and art in there. And when you find that balance, you're completely legit. You are yourself all the time. You just are also for them. It's it's a feeling.
So let's transition that into your performances. Let's transition that into your form of expression, just beginning with a set list. Something that is very actually mysterious to people is the crafting of a set list. So I would love to hear your process about doing that.
I'm clinical. I know exactly what I'm doing at exactly every second. And that helps me in my ADD, ADHD kind of mind is like, I need to know when I'm pressing play, when I'm hitting the cue, when I'm bringing in the track. Everything is surgical when it comes to my sets, from the buildups to how I'm bringing in the highs and the lows, the effect I'm using. It's all memorized. Once in a nowhere, I'll maybe throw in like an improv moment where like at Exchange, I had to. At Exchange, I have the Rick and Morty track that I just made for Who Cares? And that's a night bass track that I put, if God exists, it's fucking me. And I put that in that drop and I made a little video of it. But for some reason, the track still banged. And I was like, all right, I'm going to throw this in my set. Like, I'm just going to have this on my USB. Dude, I was putting in my last song that I planned on, that I was there. And I'm like, all right, we're coming on to the last track.
Yeah.
And it didn't read. That one track didn't read off my USB because it was like a higher bit rate, I believe. And I was like, oh my God, this song is about to end. What do I put on? I put on the Rick and Morty night bass. And that shit blew the roof off. And for the next week, my camera guy was like, if God exists, it's fucking me to me. And I have video of it on my page. And it's just like, crushes the room. The place lit up, and it was a completely improv, unplanned moment. So they happen, but when I'm choosing my set, everything is down to the second, and it's perfectly curated. What are you doing? I got my cat in here. What you doing, you shingle boy?
Excellent.
You think he wants to come? Real quick.
What's his name? We have to get a little cameo appearance. Who would
you
want
a cameo right now?
Yeah.
This is Ketami. Yes. Say hello.
The star of the show.
Oi. He's always the star.
We'll bring him back for another episode, definitely in the future.
He's chill. Okay.
So
he's such a monkey, man. I gotta not let him go on my shirts. I have to, like, he punctures holes in, like, these vintage t-shirts that I have. And I'm like,
yeah, if it's a vintage shirt, I'd be real careful. But what are you gonna do? You know, it's the trade-off.
It is.
Coming off of that, I'd like to talk to your specific songs. Okay, so obviously Daddy.
Yeah.
I wanna talk about what the inspiration behind Daddy was with Talia Paris.
Daddy was just thought of. I thought of it. I heard it in my mind immediately after the killers escaping. Mm-hmm. And Talia was so nice and sweet. Her and her manager had me come out during their set at Camel Fat at Area 15 in Las Vegas. And it's the first time, like, I'm meeting them. We're all hanging out. This is when I'm getting in buddy-buddy with Ravelation here in Las Vegas. And it's just it was a really big connect. It was a really just kind gesture. And she had me out on stage and blew it off the roof. She killed it. And I had this Daddy song in my head. And I was like, I told her manager that night, I was like, okay, I got that. I picture this track, and I want Talia to be like, Daddy, 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 let me call you Daddy. And I have it in my mind. And I was like, but I want Talia to do it, and I want us to collab on it. I want us to release it. So I brought her under my wing, and I was like, let me teach you how to release a track. Let's produce this track. And here's Talia in the studio with me, hands-on, working on the track, picking sounds with me. You know, she was a really good sport, and she recorded it, and she didn't want to re-record it. I had her in my like vocal booth, and she didn't want to re-record it. I wanted to re-record it. Like, I wasn't into it. I was like, "Ah, oh, we got to do it again. You got to come back over. I want to re-record it." She's like, "No." So her little secret genius ass like made it what it is, and it was her voice on there, and you know, and then I finished it literally in like an hour after they left, and I sent mm-hmm. them like a track, and I was like, "Dude, this is the track. This is the baseline. This is what I'm doing." You know, and I just. It flew out of me. I knew what it was. It was all in my head, and I got it all out. And I'm really grateful for that. That's how I hear things. You know, okay. Going back to like, you know, Post Malone, like, I don't know what it is. Like right now, dude, I'm alt techno. That's what I'm doing. I'm like, what's my edge? Because you got all these people out here with an edge. And I put my caliber in like people like Luca Lush, Gesture, and Chill. I say like in that order, and then I'm on the fourth, and I'm like, what's my edge?
Okay.
What's my edge with this crew? How can I do something? I'm like, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to coin alt techno. I'm not trying to coin a genre. I'm not trying to coin a genre. I'm just trying to have something that is for me. And I think, you know, tracks like that, tracks like I did, I did Suicide Boys. I did, let's see, what else did I do?
That's exactly where I would want to be. If you said to me that I had a show for you, I had an event for you, and this is going to be the genre, if I never knew who was playing, then that is where myself and I'd be bringing all of my friends. To alt
techno. You like the alt techno idea?
The notion of it as a whole really appeals to me, yeah. So yeah, I'd love to hear more of that.
So I'm trying to like, I don't know why. Oh yeah. Like I have like.
Yes.
So I want to try to do shit like that.
You have got to connect with Holiday Kirk at the New Metal Agenda. Kirk has been on this show, and he is easily the current foremost expert on nu metal, and he would love that because he loves the intersection of electronic music and that. So I have to connect you guys.
Nathan James is a friend of mine, actually, and he is crushing nu metal, bro.
Yes,
I love what he does, and he's just in the crew that I hang out with, and all those kids. Where are you? Are you in Los Angeles?
I'm in Los Angeles. I'm usually traveling, but yep, I'm in LA.
Cool. Yeah. Well, there's always a lot going on in the scene over there, and I'll keep you updated if there's little parties or things going around.
Yeah, that'll be perfect. Yeah, no, we'll definitely have to get something going. And you know, I think that's interesting because speaking to parties and things like this and memorable events, performances, the life of being a DJ, I don't know if it's as romanticized, for example, would you say it's a very romanticized lifestyle?
I think it can be.
Yeah.
I'm peeking behind the veil right now.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's different, but I think that's just the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, people want to party, they want to have fun, and what I'm noticing too is a lot of people are settling down with their significant other. They're not getting as turnt as, you know, people would think that some do. And then some are, and some actually have a really good balance. Like I think someone who has a really good balance is John Summit, but he's able to also have that balance now. He's also able to have that balance now because of the level he's on. So he can party a little bit more and then have his team of like 10 guys pick out a set list.
Yeah.
And then he could be like, all right, I'm going to use this, I'm going to use that. But that just comes with how good you are. And I support it. Me personally, man, I don't party as much as I like to party on stage. Once in a while when I get off stage, I like to cut loose, but it's professional. Like when I'm playing exchange, when I'm playing academy, I am completely straight because I'm dealing with this. I'm dealing with a label, and I want them to know like this is work to me because I know for a fact it's work for them.
Yeah,
I'm showing that they're partying. I'm showing that I'm having a good time. I am all about the night and making sure that we're having fun, because that's like that's the main focus.
So let's speak to that. Let's talk about your live performances. Let's talk about before your live performances, your preparation. Let's talk about your strategy if there is one on stage. I really want you to quarterback it for me.
Strategy for stage?
Mm-hmm. Even how you just prepare ahead of time.
It's like I said, it's clinical. It's surgical. It's in my room, practicing the set, practicing the cues once, twice a day, setting myself apart from an elite level and a local level. And I know what it takes to be on an elite level.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes preparation. It takes concentration. It takes dedication. And I'm doing those things on a daily basis, weeks, months before a show, or getting ready for a group of shows. And then that way, the cut loose comes naturally. Cutting loose, having different moments, trying new things, these all come naturally as you keep performing live. And what else? Oh, dude, I'll show up on time. I'm there on time when they tell me.
Yeah.
I am in the moment with them. I don't ask for anything. I don't ask for anything. Don't ask for shit. Do what you're told. It's like work.
Of course. Of course.
If you're a manager, you get a little more leniency. If you're a guy, if you're not a manager, you got to act like there's a manager around.
Of course.
And I dig it because I love that moment. I'm like, how can I serve? How can I be here for my audience? How can I be here for my team? How can I be here for my fans, my management, my label, my everything? How can I serve you? How can I better an experience in life? God, man, you're making me feel good about myself talking about this. I don't talk about this with people.
Well, as you should. I mean, I want to dive into the nuances, and now I'm curious I'm curious if you have any really memorable events, performances, moments so far in your career that have really stood out to you.
Oh.
The ones you can talk about.
Yeah, man. Shit, the first one was The Killers Escaping. When that shit popped off and it had 30,000 people using the audio on TikTok.
Yeah.
I was through the roof, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did it again with Daddy and I was like, did it again. And then I did it again with Using Machines with the Jim Morrison. I was like, oh my God. And it just keeps going. Obviously there's ups and downs, and nothing's The Killers Escaping, nothing's Daddy, but I'm still in this like little thing. And and then I did this track with Charlie Classic, and that was a big moment because we had some really good time in the studio. Great dude to work with. Playing Exchange and watching the crowd pop off in a bigger capacity, was pretty awesome. The way the stage was set up, they had it clean. Like, oh, it was clean, dude. And I'm like so OCD. So I'm like, yes, I want this here and that there. And let's do the lights like this. And everyone was just professional. A big moment was when I opened for Mala with Ravelation. I think I pissed Ravelation off with this one, but I closed the set with Beamer Boy. by Lil Peep, and I jumped in the crowd, and I'm like, I'm an opener. Total opener noob. Don't do it, people. If you're an opener, play the basic bullshit and do your job. But this was like my first like big show, and I opened and I opened for Mala. I was so excited. I closed with Beamer Boy. It's in Las Vegas. I know a lot of people, and here I am on the rail like motherfucking Beamer Boy, and jump in the crowd. I got my shirt off and the whole crowd's like and I literally leave the stage from the crowd. I don't go back. I let the track play. I bounce. I literally bounce. I'm like, fuck this. Then one of the DJs, one of these like DJ was like, dude, you just left the fucking decks out there. And I was like, man, I don't give a fuck. But yeah, I don't know. But then there's one dude at Ed Ravelation that really gets down with what I do. I just don't think he's got like, doesn't really have much care or say. I like him the most, and it's the guy you wouldn't expect to like you the most. And him and I just vibe, and he came up to me after, and he was like, never says a fucking word to me, ever, dude. Just comes up to me, he's like, sick set, bro. And I was like, my heart sunk. Told me I had a sick set. That's like the first fucking word he ever said to me in our entire relationship. And he bounced after that. He hasn't spoken to me since. But he gives me little nods here and there, which is cool. But he's the realest, dude. I don't want to say any names, you know, but...
of course.
I just want to say that, you know, I'm really grateful for Insomniac, Ravelation, Exchange, people that I'm around, Mala, Yoltrons. Oh, you know what? He's dope. He is the nicest, sweetest, just OG vibe. Even like get some like badass Ferrari and still like comes to like the meet and greet at Rave, the Rave Wear place. Fuck, what's it called? He even comes to like a local like Rave Wear shop and like rolls in there, says what's up. He's just so cool. I'll message him on IG. He'll message me back. I'm like, you know, just the sweetest. He's a lot of sweethearts, dude. I think there's a lot of sweethearts. The more OG they get, the more sweetheart they are.
I agree with that.
But the bigger they are, I don't think it's anything negative. I just think they just don't have the time.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Like when I message like Dylan Francis, and I'm like, hey, he doesn't get back to me. But I'm like, that's understandable.
Yeah, you're right. It's just a time thing. But I've noticed that as well. The more experienced they are, they tend to have a lot more camaraderie with people. That's been my experience in just whether it be fashion or things of that nature. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I guess speaking to that, from your perspective, how has the electronic music scene evolved over the years?
Oh, goodness. I'm a newbie. I fell in it. I can't speak much to it, but it feels like the music industry.
Yeah.
It feels like it's what the music business is. And the music business is a business. And there is a lot to do with that. Higher you climb the ladder, the more business you'll see.
Sure.
And you know, you notice people. I notice when someone's being a dick.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't say anything. God, I want to. I notice when someone's being sweet, like someone like Yoltron who reaches out, someone like West End who is there, someone like Shipwreck who also major sweethearts in their own way to the time that they have. Disco Lines even had time for me when I was I just show up to their show just to say what's up, and the motherfucker says what's up. Yeah. Like they have time, and I noticed that just people are just really sweet and kind. And then there's you know what it is, the higher you get up the ladder, the sweeter the people get. The lower you are on the ladder, the more big time people think they are. And I'm like, all right, man, good for you. I wish I felt that. I wish I felt that big.
No, but that a lot of people, myself included, have noticed that. That is the truth. People tend to be the most egoic the earliest in their career. And when you talk to these OGs, music, fashion, they all tend to, like I said, have more camaraderie. They tend to have just more, well, if anything, they're more nice. Let's just put it like that in more very nice. General terms. Yeah, they're just more nice. Fuck it.
Yeah, I love it.
And I guess what's been for you specifically the most rewarding part of your journey as a DJ thus far, what would you say? Or many things.
You know, there's a fire in my heart that shows light to me having accomplished something in music that I've always wanted to accomplish, and I've done it here in the electronic scene.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if I can take a step back and be happy with what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
There is a part of me that wants more, but there's also a part of me that has done things I never thought I'd ever do in music, mm-hmm. in shows, in writing. And that kind of is what keeps me going is, you know, making Rockstar. I'm like, well, I can't stop now. I just made that. That's what's hard. That's what's hard to find the balance. And it's hard to find that balance sometimes. And rewarding to me, you know what I was really into?
What's that?
I was really into showing people music. And I'm going to just say this because I don't say it to anybody, but like, I feel like TikTok kind of took that away from me. Just, I feel like I could say, hey, go listen to this track. And then, you know, 100,000 people would go listen to a track. And I'm like, where did my ability to do that go?
Mm-hmm.
Because I did that for artists and I get them 500,000 streams, 1,000,000 streams. And I'm like, is that being controlled? Is it starts to make me have this, like, is there a conspiracy? And I just feel like I was able to, and that's what bummed me out. It's like someone like Yoltron, who was like really nice, really sweet and really cool. And just was there for me. I wanted to be like, hey, everyone, go listen to this track and then make him like $5,000.
Yeah.
Just because I want to. And I used to have that pull. And now I fucking don't, man. And I'm pissed. Ugh. And well, I wonder where it went. But that was a big highlight, being able to do that for artists. And
well, I would like to speak to that briefly, because as we, you know, head into the final questions of the conversation, I would really like to know your thoughts on the future. Because what you're describing, I think, at least in the general sense, is human curation versus AI versus algorithm versus technology.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, you are in a very technologically centric industry, and so I'm sure you embrace it more than other people. You even said earlier, you know, you were analog, but now you embrace technology.
I embrace so much. I embrace it all. Embrace it all.
Mm-hmm.
Drop it. Mm-hmm. There's a voice in your head that is telling you what to do, and your ego tells that voice to shut up.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to drop that. Classify yourself. Put yourself in a genre.
Mm-hmm.
Put yourself in the mainstream, but don't lose yourself. Find that mm-hmm. balance. I love AI. I love the algorithm. I love mm-hmm. it all. I am grateful for it. If we didn't mm-hmm. have it, we wouldn't, you and I wouldn't be able to do what we're doing right now. We wouldn't have what we have right now. I wouldn't have what I have right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's so egotistical and pretentious when someone talks about the ability to show our product today.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have too much. I'm so cool that I don't have to do that. That right there, shut the fuck up. Like, if the Beatles had what we have today, they would be doing it in the best way. They would be they would be showing us how it's done in this. And I've talked about this before, and I embrace it all. I'm here for it. And I don't know. I don't know. I think that the algorithm can be controlled with money. That's the scary. That's the scary one. Is I think that, you know, you have, you know, label plants posing as curators.
Mm-hmm.
And there is that side of it, and that's there. It's like you see these major curators that are, you know, all of a sudden have 3 million followers. It's like, how?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're being pushed, you're being financed, you're being, you know, controlled in these back doors, I think. And it's just, yeah, man, that's what I, you know, I told them to fuck off when they came to me. They wanted Fair to enough. Pay me. They wanted to pay me to show music, man. I said no. And all of a sudden, I couldn't show music anymore the way I was doing it.
That's integrity.
It's crazy. I know. It's integrity. And then here I am texting them. Hey, you know what? If you want me to do that, I'm going to do it. You know, because I'm not. Yeah. Yeah, dude. For sure. It's real. It's real. I support it all. I support it. We have. Oh, man, I've never been able to show my music like I show it today.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you balance that? How do you balance commercial? Okay, well, I would put it this way: commerciality versus artistic integrity. How do you balance those two facets?
Luck.
Mm.
I think some people. I'm going to try and articulate this.
Okay.
I think some people have the privilege of being able to be a complete artist. And some people have to ride the wave of commercialism. Acceptance is crucial when navigating it. Personally, and I think I can speak for a lot of artists, is, you know, like I just said it right now, like I didn't sell out. Then I chose I wanted to sell out because I didn't get what I want. I don't get what I want anymore because of control.
Mm-hmm.
I've also niched myself into a genre. I think a lot of young artists follow the path, follow the structure, be a follower, because you're not really following. Because as a real artist, no matter how much you try and follow, you're always going to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an ego trip. I've learned that as I've grown through art. You know, I've turned down fucking 360 contracts. Today, I would be like, let me sign that motherfucker. I'm going to sign that 360. You want to take 90%? You don't get offered those things. I think that's just you don't get offered those things every day. And I think people that have this like integrity about it have the privilege to do so because they are the one that's standing above. But there's a million that aren't because they have that integrity. It's just some people with integrity have the privilege of being on top and doing it. There's just a small window of those.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, good for you. Fuck yeah. Because I'm there too. But fuck it. I'll sign the 360 deal. I'll sign my whole life away for a shot.
Sure.
But I'll always be myself. I choose both. I always choose both. Fuck it. Fuck it, man. Like, selling out is different than people think selling out is.
Mm.
It's probably a contract under one of the guys that said he didn't sell out. I think one of the non-sellout people would be Suicide Boys.
Fair enough. Yeah, the greatest indie artist and rap. Bro,
like, yeah. But you know how many are like that?
Yeah.
One. Wait, who else? Who's fully independent that's just like crazy? Was it like Chance the Rapper? No.
You know, I'm not sure, but it sounds accurate.
Dude, there's like one in a million are the ones that do it. I hope I'm communicating this all right, because I support the sellout. I support the, let me get this, the sellouts. What is this? It's like I support the sellout. I support the outcast.
There it is.
Support them both.
There it is.
And I think it's, you're both in both worlds. You just have a little bit of one or the other. And integrity is always within yourself and your heart. And no one can take that away from you. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a fantastic way of putting it. And, you know, people who aren't entrenched in the creative industries, they might not understand the nuances, and they're so quick to judge. People, like you said, going back to early in our conversation, are very subjective. They're possessive in the way they view artists.
Right.
And, you know, so I think giving them insight to the fact, like, let's not judge so quickly. There's many different paths, and there's a logical process that you do not see. And right. That's the business of it too. So yeah, I respect you saying that. Thank you for articulating that.
I hope I did, man. You know, I wish I was a voice for, I wish I was a voice. I'm not the best for this. And I know that you seem the type that would have, you know, very, very strong opinion on all this, and someone who would, really be able to articulate, like the realities.
No, I think that's exactly what you're doing. I think you coming on podcasts and just giving your perspective, I think that is more meaningful, because most people would not be as authentic and honest. And that is what the world needs more of: authenticity, honesty. That's how we break these vicious cycles. So
yeah, I'm trying to be, yeah. I'm trying to be, you know, trying to be being a voice for the people is a difficult task. And I want to just encourage everyone to just be themselves, have acceptance and love, and be brave. Have acceptance and love, and be brave in expressing.
That's it. That's the moral of it. Be brave. Yeah. So this brings us to our final question. This brings us to you, the future, because I'm excited. I know your other fans are excited. Let's talk about upcoming projects, collaborations, things you're particularly excited about.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of sending that Post Malone track to Yoltron, actually.
Do it.
I'm thinking about it, like, I'm like, yo, dude, you want to work on this with me? That's one of my goals this year. Is working on a track with him and see if he wants to. We'll see. Accomplishing 12 songs this year is what I want to do. Want to have 2 million streams this year. I want to play Exchange again. I want to open for Eli Brown. I'm going to do these things. I'm already telling Eli Brown in his comments. In every video he posts, I'm like, I'm going to open for you one this year. Pissed off Brownies and Lemonade like that. I'm gonna play here one day. They fucking hate me. I comment like that on every video.
You got to.
But I think those are my things. Is I wanted to tour, but the crew I want to tour with, man, they're just like a little lazy right now. I wanted to set up a tour with the crew, and I wanted to set the tour up. I want to release with Yoltron, 2 million streams, play Exchange twice. I'm going to say it right now because we're here. Twice. Open for Eli Brown. And go see Metallica in Mexico City.
There it is. Yeah, I'll probably go with you.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because I come to Mexico City a lot.
Dude, if you do, I'm going the first night when they play with Greta Van Fleet.
That'd be sick. What month is
if
that?
If you're there. September, I think. Okay. I got my tickets.
We'll kick it before then. If not, we'll at least kick it before then.
I'll let you know when I'm in Los Angeles.
That's what's up, brother. Well, sleep. All I got to say, this has been a great interview. Thank you for opening up as much as you did. And, you know, we'll have to hang and do this again one time in the future. Thank you so much, man.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me on here. You've been so sweet.
Thank you, man.